What a weekend of sports. This is the Sunday Puncher podcast, and we're going to talk about a packed week of boxing action. The NFL came back this weekend. The Patriots have finally embraced their roles as heels. Cristiano Ronaldo scored 5 goals. Troy Tulowitzki cracked his shoulder in half somehow. And yet, Mayweather Berto was the talking point of this weekend. And let's just go right into it, guys. Floyd Mayweather versus Andre Berto, the last fight of Floyd Mayweather's career. And he dominated Andre Berto from start to finish. I don't think there was a point in that fight where Mayweather was ever in trouble. Let's acknowledge Dean right off the front. And he said that Berto was going to be more competitive than Manny Pacquiao was. What do you guys think?
I don't think that panned out. I would say it's pretty clear that that didn't pan out. I don't think Berto was more competitive. I think there are rounds where that you could justifiably give to Pacquiao. I don't know where there was a round that you could give to Berto. So that makes it a mute point, in my opinion.
I think the difficulty there is going to be that more of a fight took place. The action was stilted in the Pacquiao fight because Pacquiao was being neutralized so effectively, whereas more exchanges took place. You know, they were one-way exchanges to a large extent, but exchanges took place in the fight, and that's going to lead people to believe that it was a more action-packed, more exciting, and therefore more competitive fight. I don't think that it's true that Berto was more competitive, but he definitely had more success in the fight purely because there were exchanges that were allowed to happen.
Well, more happened, but it was by no means competitive.
Yeah.
Do you guys think that Mayweather and Berto's success was a result of Mayweather just coasting? You know, to me, he never looked like he was locked in. He didn't look like he ever really figured Berto out. He just fought the same way the entire fight. Do you guys think that Mayweather kind of fought down to Berto's level?
I just saw Mayweather being a little more aggressive than he normally is, honestly.
Especially with that uppercut.
Especially in the opening rounds. He came out really aggressive, and it made me think, oh, maybe he's trying to make a statement here. I don't think that he, you know, I don't think Berto's some enigma that he wasn't able to solve, if that's what you're getting at.
No, I don't think he even really attempted to. He just went out and did what he needs to do.
Well, exactly. He knew right from the get-go what he needed to do. What he needed to do to beat Berto, and he just did that. And there was nothing else. There were no, maybe there, you didn't see any huge adjustments out of him, but none were needed.
I think we saw the same Floyd that we saw against Maidana in their first encounter, where he was in sort of first gear for a lot of the fight. And as a result of that, it may look like there were levels of exchanges and heated moments, but in reality, it was him, as a result of him being in his lowest setting without taking it seriously or showing, you know, any respect.
Right, and this is us being super critical of Mayweather, because by a normal fighter standards, what Mayweather did to Berto last night was ridiculous. I mean, total 17% landing. He landed at 86% with his power shots. It's just unheard of statistics in a fight, and yet for Floyd Mayweather, that's still not good enough. Not for what we know is he's capable of.
And the thing about the Maidana analogy is, at least Maidana had some limited success. I didn't see any success from Berto.
All Berto was successful at doing was smothering Mayweather on the ropes and just smothering his attack. It's the exact same thing that Sean Porter was doing to Kell Brook. And it may look like that can get you into a close fight. It doesn't win it, but it can fool people into thinking that you're effective with what you're doing.
I didn't see. Yeah, I'm sure it could fool people.
It's obviously it's not right.
Nothing. It's ineffective aggression, and people go for it.
But he wasn't even super active. Like, sometimes you expect that kind of ineffective aggression from somebody who's being super active. But, you know, Berto was active to a degree, but he wasn't, like, you know, out there throwing 100 punches around.
Yeah.
I don't think, was he?
No, not at all. But it is the sort of work that can fool you into thinking that more has happened. Yeah, it's no surprise that, for example, Amir Khan thought that Berto had a good number of rounds behind him.
Well, yeah, Amir Khan's his friend.
I literally didn't score one round for Berto.
Not even out of pity. Come on, man.
Not even a courtesy harsh. Round.
I didn't even give him a courtesy round, though.
Harsh. Did Mayweather look like a guy that at this point he's hanging it up at the right time?
Well, mentally and psychologically, probably. Physically, right. He could definitely go on. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, he seems to be sort of at peace with it and the business.
Yeah, I could definitely agree with that. I didn't see any kind of signs of slippage from Mayweather. Kind of take a look at Sergio Martinez, right? He had signs of slippage after this Chavez Jr. fight when he fought Martin Murray. Everybody kind of knew something was wrong. Mayweather doesn't have that same kind of physical slippage that we've seen in the past from other fighters. But I definitely agree with Simon as far as the mental aspect goes. He definitely looks a little checked out.
I agree with that. I think that's a good way to put it. He's a bit checked out now. And
why not? He demolished the biggest fight of his career. Mm. You know what I mean? Utterly dominated the other top competitor in the sport. Fought Andre Berto as a tactic to say, hey, look, there's literally nothing else I have to do. Like, yeah, I'd be checked out too.
And he's made all this money. He's got all of the things. And I think he really is ready for the new challenge. From this fight,
he's a guaranteed $36 million from Showtime.
They never bring it up enough. His earnings and it's just not, you know, put it's enough emphasis about. On. Yeah, I know. You know, they should mention his like career to date earnings and things. I think that it would endear people to him and just help build his brand, really.
Okay. Do you believe him? I mean, we asked this last week, but now we've seen him fight. We've seen him talk. After the fight, in an interview and in the post-fight press conference, do you believe him that he's actually gone for good?
Hell no. I don't. I think he's going to wait for Pacquiao to knock out a couple low-level oppositions 18 months.
I don't think Pacquiao's knocking anybody out.
Yeah, this is it.
Low-level.
Really, like, they're Chris not going to... something. He's not knocking... Yeah, he couldn't even knock out Chris Algieri.
No, but you're
before the shoulder...
But you're pulling somebody up from maybe a weight class or two below him, right? You're gonna
somebody's gonna knock out Jose Felix Jr.
You're gonna give him those kind of advantages, you know. You're gonna put him in the ring with people that he really looks good against.
So you're gonna count on Bob Arum giving Pacquiao soft fights that aren't gonna sell, probably aren't pay per view fights. Bob Arum.
Well, any fight that Pacquiao's in is gonna be a pay per view. So
not if he fights Jose Felix Jr.
Maybe. I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah, seriously.
But,
I think HBO is smarter than that.
I believe that Mayweather means it when he says that he's gone for good. I don't know whether he'll stick to that, but I think that right now he is 100% sure of himself when he says it.
Just one quick question, guys. We're jumping ahead, but how soon do you think it's going to be before people want to see Mayweather come back to fight Spence? Is it a year away?
No, I think Spence needs a little more developmental time.
Well, in a year. Do you think people are going to say that?
I don't know that it's a year. I think that would be pushing. I think that would be rushing the timeline on Spence, honestly.
I think it follows the narrative.
Do you think it's going to happen? Because people aren't clamoring to see Vitaly come back to handle people like Wilder. You know, there's not a big sense of desire
for
that.
But there's two Klitschkos. I think people forgot that the other one existed.
Hmm.
Well, honestly, what will happen is if Mayweather, you know, it's clear that he stays retired, there's just going to be a vast gap in the welterweight division for a little while till somebody proves supremacy. And, you know, it's seeming more and more likely that that person could be Spence. And then who knows at that point if he's able to really dominate, you know, all of what people consider the top five, top 10 at welterweight, then who knows? People may start calling for Mayweather to come out of retirement at that point. But I think that point isn't a year from now. I think that Spence needs to fight, you know, the Thurmans, Danny Garcia's, Lamont Peterson's. That those three fights alone, you're not seeing all in one year.
Cal Brook,
you know, you're not seeing those all of those fights within a year. So I think a year is putting a little bit too tight of a time frame on it. But I totally get what the concept you're bringing. But there may just be too big of a generational gap that we'll ever see that fight happen or that will ever even be talked about too much.
What do you guys think is next for Andre Berto? Where does he go from here? Other than to the bank, because he just got paid $4 million. Actually, a better question is, how soon do we see Andre Berto in the ring?
Did he get paid $4 million? Was $4 million. Wow.
That's what Mayweather said in the press conference anyway.
That's almost million. Triple what Robert Guerrero got.
Well,
that speaks to my...
Berto threw triple the amount of punches, too.
It's not a loss that's going to harm his career or marketability at all. You know, you get a pass for losing to Mayweather. So, you know, he could do anything. He's not destined to be, you know, a master of the division, but he's going to be, you know, peripheral relevancy for a while. So, you know, there's lots of people within the top 10 you could put him against for a fairly fun matchup.
Yeah, I think Berto still has a fourth act of his career that starts now. And I think Berto can still compete with anybody, you know, that's not in the top 10 easily. I think a fight with a rematch with Robert Guerrero is due. Guerrero hasn't looked good, and I think Berto takes it this time as long as the referee doesn't allow Guerrero to hold and hit with the other hand. I think that would be a good fight and a good way for Berto to get back on his feet once he's done enjoying that $4 million payday.
It depends promotionally how they want to use him. They could use him to catapult an up-and-coming person.
Spence's next victim?
Well, yeah, potentially.
There you go. Exactly.
Is he ready to give up?
Spence gets the knockout and is suddenly a superstar doing what Mayweather could not.
Look at that. Exactly.
See, right.
It could be a year before we're calling Spence and Mayweather.
Exactly. That would be the way to bring Spence and Mayweather together within the course of a year. That would be the timeline.
Spence beats Berto, knocks him out, and then beats somebody like Keith Thurman.
Yep.
You'll have a strong pull for Mayweather versus Spence. I don't think that fight actually will ever happen, though. What did you guys think of the Salido versus Martinez fight on the undercard? I saw some comments, people calling it a fight of the year. What do you guys think? I just got to say, this rookie Marcus Mariota is carving up the Bucks. Go ahead, Jason.
Absolutely not. I thought it was an ugly fight from two guys who were exhausted from about the fourth or fifth round on, which made their technical ability and quote-unquote craft of boxing diminish rather quickly. And turn into a, you know, not even like a slugfest all-out war as much of a just kind of uninteresting. It was fun to watch, I guess, you know, I could see that argument, but to me, fight of the year, no way in hell. Maybe I'm being an overly critical, but that was just, you know, my take on it.
Well, you've always been critical of Puerto Ricans and Mexicans fighting each other. So let's get Simon's point of view.
Stop it.
It's a shame because it was ugly to watch. The result was confusing. And I wouldn't be surprised if they go at it again and make us, you know, endure that again.
Well, that's the thing. How much do you want to see that fight again?
Well, that was one of those fights that's exhausting to watch because it was just punches mostly. It was just punches with nothing on them, just punches. And that's doesn't make for interesting fights. I've always make this argument, and the perfect example is when we had Marquez Pacquiao 4 and Rios Alvarado in the same year. Pacquiao Marquez 4 was a way more entertaining fight, and it was because they competed at a much higher skill level. It wasn't just punches. You saw feints. You saw footwork. You saw little defensive posturing and stuff that each guy did. And in Rios Alvarado, you just saw two dudes punching each other in the face. And that's exactly what this was. You know, Salido threw 100 punches around or whatever he did. I didn't think this fight was that entertaining. I thought the first few rounds were pretty captivating. But other than that, it wasn't that great of a fight.
What I was getting at. You know, about four rounds were, you know, interesting, but it seemed like something changed after the fourth round, and I think it had partly to do
Martinez
with exhaustion.
Gassed. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
He gassed bad.
And it just made the fight a lot less interesting to watch.
I had Salido winning that one pretty easily. What did you guys think or see? Or did you even score it?
We actually had some people over the house, so I wasn't able to score the fight. I wasn't able to score this fight, and I'm upset because obviously it seems like there's some controversy out there.
I had Salido comfortably ahead as well. And the thing is, them rematching to settle a draw is, I don't know, potentially robbing you of a more interesting matchup where you've got, I don't know, the Takashis at the top of the game. That I don't know, there's just a lot going on that is possibly going to be delayed if they do a rematch here.
Well,
and this fight ended in a draw, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't think a fight with any, like these two, in a title fight against any other, whether it be unification or a top guy at the division, they're not winning. I don't think we've seen enough from either of these guys in this fight that they're going to, like, Takashi Uchiyama will beat both on the same night, probably.
Mm-hmm. But you don't think it would help unify the division in terms of, it feels like there's two super featherweight divisions at the minute. There's the sort of Southeast Asian, you know, side of things, and then there's the, I don't know, the Central and South America's area, and they're sort of distinctly separate.
And each is equally unpopular.
I just wonder if a sense of unity might make, I don't know, more interesting and competitive matchups.
You know, I'm going to take that back because Jose Pedraza is going to draw some interest and he's returning soon on that Broner undercard. And, you know, the winner of this fight could have set themselves up for that fight. And, you know, maybe they just say, you know, Salido, whatever, we don't care if you have the title or not. We'll give you Pedraza after Pedraza beats Edner Cherry because we have another Puerto Rico versus Mexico fight to sell, and I can see them doing that. Let's move on to the Badu Jack versus George Groves fight. If you would have asked me a year ago, will Badu Jack ever win a world title? I would have told you, no. Will Badu Jack ever successfully defend a world title? Again, I would have said, what do you mean successfully defend a world title? Because he won't get one. But secondly, if he were to somehow get one and he fought anybody in the top 10, the answer is no. Not the same guy who got knocked out by Derek Edwards in the first round. How far has Jack come?
I don't know. Markedly better than in the past. It's difficult to say as well whether it's that he's developed or that we've seen something that we didn't appreciate previously. I was fairly confident that Groves would pull out a UD here, and it was leagues apart.
I was so confident that the exact opposite would happen in that.
Yeah, and you can bathe in the sweet land of vindication, but.
Yes, and I am so happy. I knew Jack would
win
this.
Wait a second. Jason, you did not pick Jack because you think Jack's good. You picked Jack because you hate Groves.
Irrelevant.
Of course it is. Go on.
No, I picked Jack because. Part of it is, you know, I don't think too highly of Groves. So if you put somebody like Jack in there with somebody that I don't think too highly of, I'm going to pick the person I don't think too highly of. So here's the thing with Jack. And it was very telling in his post-fight press conference where they asked him, you know, what do you think? He had just won the fight, right? And they're asking him, hey, what do you think you could do better? And he rattled off like two or three things that he was openly ready to admit after successfully defending his title fight. You know, he was like,
and being,
you know,
pretty dominant too.
Right. He's like, you know what? I could have worked a little bit more on my defense. I could have done a little bit better with some head movement. So like what that tells me is he learned from that knockout loss. And he's going forward with that knowledge of like, hey, I need to be a better fighter in the gym. I need to do everything I need to do to keep this title. And then to hear him in the post-fight interview like acknowledge some weaknesses was like, this guy is on the right track. He's honest with himself. He's got people in his corner who are honest with him. You know what I mean? He's got a good team who's obviously helping him build to bigger things. Yeah, I was really psyched that he won.
That's a really good point, Jason. And I think maybe Jack.
Yeah, you keep me on the podcast for a reason. every once in a while.
But Jack just kind of getting that he's a flawed fighter and he's not perfect, and that there's actually stuff to work on has been his greatest strength. And it's something that Groves can look at because Groves lost the Frosch fight in the first one and then switches from Adam Booth, who's a fantastic trainer, to Paddy Fitzpatrick. Now, no diss to Paddy Fitzpatrick, but it's not like anything was not working going into the Frosch 1 fight. I mean, you just got stopped kind of early. Maybe you had a shot. I don't know. I think it was a good stoppage, but that's a whole other subject.
Thank you. Good stoppage.
But Jack, I mean, it just speaks to Groves thinking that the source of his loss there was not just that he messed up, but that maybe his trainer didn't give him something that he needed.
And it speaks to Jack being like, hey, no, this is me. I'm in control of my career. I need to figure things out. Two totally different fighter mentalities.
Yep. So, and that's, I mean, that kind of answers the question of what should George Groves do next? It's like, well, first he should get that he is not Carl Froch or Joe Calzaghe or Floyd Mayweather, but he's George Groves, and George Groves has some flaws that he needs to work on.
He won't, though. He doesn't listen to direction. He's
right. He's stubborn.
Annoyingly obstinate.
Yes.
I want to see him retire, if I'm honest. It, not because I dislike the guy, but I dislike the boxer. He is frustrating because there's raw talent there. He has abilities, and he just doesn't use them. He doesn't utilize them. He doesn't take direction. He doesn't take criticism. He doesn't seem to be aware of what's going on or why anything's happening. You know, it's just irritating to see someone with that much ability just completely piss it up the wall out of, like, pig-headedness.
So here's something that you don't hear from me often is give George Groves credit on something. And that's he did appear to work on his stamina issues, it seemed.
Oh, he lasted 8 rounds instead of 6?
Yeah. No, even beyond that, I thought, you know, he didn't go as downhill as we've seen him in the past. So, you know, maybe give the guy a little bit of credit for that.
All right, so
if you want,
Groves and Amir Khan are two of the fighters that will get you. They've just got this army of fans that are always at the ready to defend them and just bury you in the offhand chance that you might criticize one of them. But let's get in one of their good graces and not so much in the other one. You're a boxing trainer, okay? And you have to choose between training Groves or Amir Khan, and the other one has to retire. Who do you pick? And you're responsible for them, for their future.
Khan, definitely.
Jason,
I think that's pretty easy. I think it's clear that Khan has some natural abilities that are surpass what Groves has.
I will say this: Groves has a better jab. Groves' jab is
He has really good raw tools, but I feel that you'd be able to, maybe with a lot of patience and energy, get through to Khan eventually, whereas Groves might as well have like an owl for his trainer. He just didn't listen, he didn't do anything as instructed.
Did you say an owl?
Yeah.
All right, Johnny Gonzalez versus Jonathan Oquendo. Question that's obvious here, right on the tip of everybody's tongue, is Johnny Gonzalez shot? Is he done?
If he's not shot, he's close to.
Who's closer, him or George Groves?
Oh, Johnny Gonzalez. I
think it depends what we mean by shot.
They're never going to get any better. They're declining rapidly.
I'm thinking in a more of like a taking punishment sense.
Yeah, Gonzalez has got great instincts. Do you see when he got hurt? He was in panic mode like a pro. He immediately was firing back, not letting the ref have the opportunity to stop him. You know, he was being defensive, and he was out on his feet, you know, practically, but his instincts were just supreme. People should look at that as an example of how to respond when you're in immense trouble, because he handled it fantastically. But unfortunately, as good as his ring IQ and instincts are, he just hasn't got the fitness or the quickness or the physical traits needed anymore, and what he does have won't carry him.
One thing I got to say about Gonzalez, and this comes from training alongside Marquez and with Nacho Berrasain, but he throws some absolutely beautiful punches sometimes. Just the form on them is remarkable, and the way he's able to land his hooks and stuff, and it is why he knocked out Abner Mares. You know, that punch was coming from a place Mares had no clue it would come from. But I think that this is pretty much it for Gonzalez.
you want to see him train in the new generation. He's clearly got so much knowledge to pass on. I just think that he's wasting his career at the minute trying to box rather than trying to train.
Yeah, put him, let him train Leo Santa Cruz.
I don't even know if that's an insult or not, because I know you don't like Santa Cruz. So I'm trying to, can you help me out here? I don't understand your comment.
Well, no, just as Simon was saying, he has so much boxing knowledge and skill to impart.
Has Santa Cruz won you over?
No, but it's a testament to saying that Johnny Gonzalez is good and has a lot to offer somebody who needs something to offer.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, let's talk about the Spike TV card. We had Adonis Stevenson in the main event, and he took care of Tommy Carpensi in 3 rounds. One question for you guys. Have you ever seen a quicker 38-year-old light heavyweight than Stevenson? And I know he's not as, you know, he doesn't actually have all the years you would expect on a 38-year-old because he got a late start to boxing, but Stevenson is remarkably quick for a guy his age.
He is old. That's for sure. And my always fear with him is that's going to catch up, you know, real quickly one day. But you're right. He doesn't seem to lose any of that quickness fight to fight since we've seen him, you know, since he really busted onto the scene, knocking out Dawson. He's remained the same fighter.
I think.
Yeah, in terms of quickness at light heavyweight, maybe Hopkins at 41.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is when you're only quick with one hand, it's like only 50% of quickness.
Well, I was going to say that Stevenson's 1-2, like the only 1-2 better is from a southpaw in the sport is Pacquiao's 1-2. And now a lot of guys have figured out the timing to that punch because of his little jab step that he does before he throws it a lot of the time. But it's just as effective as Pacquiao's was in his prime. And, you know, 2009 Pacquiao with that 1-2 was just, you couldn't stop him. I mean, unless you were probably somebody like Floyd Mayweather, who's a defensive master. But and that's why Emmanuel Stewart always told Stevenson to stay away from Hopkins, because Hopkins would, you know, neutralize that real quick.
Neutralize, yeah.
But Carpensi, I think he did. I thought it was similar between what he and Michael Zarafa were doing. They chose not to engage he chose not to engage Stevenson unless he really needed to. And when Stevenson would hit him, he would just kind of jump back and get out of the exchange. Or when he would land on Stevenson, he quickly jumped away and said, I'm not going to get greedy here. And unfortunately for Carpensi, the left did get there and he was done. This isn't a fight that really tells us anything. Carpensi was not a guy who was going to tell us, oh yeah, well, Stevenson's really developed his right hand or anything like that. No, Stevenson just needed to be Stevenson to win this one. The real story from this card was Errol Spence versus Chris Van Heerden. Now, going into this fight, Van Heerden was going to be a really good test for Spence because Van Heerden's tough, never been dropped, never been knocked out. His only loss was controversial. He should have won that fight. And he's been around for a long time. He's a big guy with length. A good guy to test a young up-and-comer like Spence and really just give Spence one of them toughness checks. And he did that. He took a lot of Spence's power that, you know, guys usually don't take. But Spence just showed he's on a whole other level, and he got to him after several rounds. Where do you guys place Spence now in the welterweight division? Does he enter your top 10?
I think for all intents and purposes, you know, you talk about the eye test a lot. Without a doubt, Spence passes the eye test. You know, he seems like as close to the fighter that, you know, may go really, really far in the welterweight division. Obviously, you know, we haven't seen him up against the toughest, you know, competition. But the great thing about him is every time he does step up his level of competition, there's no flaw exposed. You know, a lot of times when we see these guys kind of slowly move up the ranks, like right as they should be, every once in a while they run into a fighter that really throws them off their game and really, you know, messes with them. And unless I'm misremembering, Spence has really handled a lot of fighters with ease. And there's just something about his poise and the way that he fights with so few fights that is really impressive to me.
Yeah, he's in that middle level at the moment where he's – a fast ascending hopeful that I don't know if he's cracked my top 10 yet. Maybe he has, maybe he hasn't, but he's probably similarly aligned to someone like Saddam Ali, who's thick and fast coming into that spot.
I think Spence's only struggle was Ronald Cruz, and that was because Cruz wasn't going to get knocked out unless you brought a brick into the ring, or you otherwise said as he was fighting Antonio Margarito. But other than that, Spence just couldn't hurt him in that fight. So it was kind of a dull fight because Cruz made it ugly, and then Spence couldn't do what he normally does. If I was going to be critical of Spence, and Oscar Valdez was doing the same thing this weekend against Chris Avalos. They were getting caught with shots that they really didn't need to get caught with, and it was because they were just staying in the pocket too long. They were taking pictures of what they were doing, and not too big of a concern right now. I think both of these guys firmly knew how in control they were of the fight, and it was fine for them to stay in the pocket however long they wanted. Now, the top 10 at welterweight.
It's not too... I mean, obviously, the top five kind of have to be, without question, Floyd, Manny, Kel, Keith, Bradley. Maybe Bradley not. That's not...
If we're asking you, no.
Yeah, if we're asking you, no.
But yeah, that's about right.
And then just below that, you've probably got people like Garcia, Porter, Khan. I don't know. Alexander, maybe? Get those people that...
We got to throw Danny Garcia in there, Saddam Ali, I think, before Devin Alexander, and even Diego Chavez.
So yeah, I mean, at that point, you've kind of established that, you know, that top 9-10, and it's kind of difficult to throw any of those names out lower than Errol Spence.
Right, just because of the level that he's been in with.
But it's not many more names you'd have to reach to get to Errol Spence.
Right.
I mean, is there anybody outside of those guys that are better than Spence right now at welterweight? I don't think so. Even with BoxRec, you know, numbers system, Spence is only of those guys. The only guys that we didn't mention are Brandon Rios and Devin Alexander. Or sorry, not Devin Alexander, Jesse Vargas.
Okay.
Mm.
And I think we're all in agreement that neither of those guys get past Spence.
Vargas and who else?
Brandon Rios. Definitely not. Vargas probably not, I guess, as well.
Yeah, I think that's pretty... I think they'd be obviously, you know, big step-up fights, but there's nothing in me that has any worry that Spence isn't going to be able to step up to the occasion to that level.
Can I put you guys on the spot?
Like usual, you mean?
What are you talking about? I always tell you what we're going to talk about on the podcast.
Mm.
So somebody put a gun to your head and they said, I want you to tell me the next Floyd Mayweather. I'm going to put all my money on this. Who do you say?
What do you mean by that?
The next pay-per-view star and best fighter in the sport.
Hated at welterweight.
No.
Okay, well, so yeah, this is what I'm trying to establish.
They just want to know who's the next best pound-for-pound king.
But we're sticking within welterweight.
It's up to you. I think it's easier if you don't.
Can I go with Terence Crawford?
Right.
Of course. Of course you can go Terence Crawford. You can do whatever you want, Simon.
He's the obvious choice, but he's not the most marketable fighter from a personality standpoint. So he doesn't fit that kind of Floyd Mayweather thing. But
so he's had 26 fights at the minute. So let's look. So 26 fights into Mayweather's career, he was fighting Carlos Hernandez. Was he a massive pay-per-view draw at this point in time?
No. But he also was a massive pay-per-view? I don't think so.
He was a star because he would just come off beating Diego Corrales.
But it was I don't think star's right. I think he'd just piqued the public's interest.
Right.
He was definitely appearing on pound-for-pound list, that's for sure.
He was just starting to appear, though, is the point. It was his...
Just like Crawford. He
wasn't a global sensation probably until as late as De La Hoya.
Right.
Right, I think you're on par right here. And he didn't become a pay-per-view star. And stars, like, roughly putting it, because Danny Garcia is a star right now, but that's like, okay, a boxing star.
He's not a pay-per-view star.
But Mayweather became a pay-per-view star, quote-unquote, when he fought Gotti in his 34th fight. So, and that's like five fights before he fights De La Hoya and Ricky Hatton. So I think Crawford's on pace right now. Now, unfortunately, Crawford doesn't really have much going for him as far as marketability. But at this point, Mayweather didn't either.
Yeah, but he transformed himself.
Like,
is Crawford going to transform himself? I don't know.
Does Crawford does he have a backstory that he could revert to?
He does.
Can he just do that?
He has a good backstory.
Like, I want Mike Alvarado to be. Yeah, exactly. I want Mike Alvarado to be like, I wouldn't want to be Terrence Crawford.
Right. Yeah, no, he has a backstory that could be played upon, you know, and get, you know, public sympathy behind him. You know. Like I said, he literally got shot in the head through a window in a car after a, you know, game of dice went bad. I don't know.
I think
he's marketable, but is Top Rank the right promoter for him?
I think is Crawford
going to get him there.
He should play up that he's been shot in the head and call himself like the Miracle Man and say like, "I'm chosen by God. I'm here for a reason, and I'll beat you. It's God's will. I survived a bullet to the head. What have you survived? Oh, a split decision with Jesse Vargas? No, Bradley, you're getting knocked out. I think that'll work." let's see. Peter Quillin versus Michael Zarafa. That was a brutal knockout. If you haven't seen it, Zarafa's head snapped back, and as soon as that punch landed, you knew it was bad. But the thing that was also bad was that Peter Quillin made 160. Why? It was a 163 catch weight, and you lost your belt on the scale against Andy Lee in your last fight for not making weight. So what is going on? But then he rehydrates to 182, which is a very Chavez Jr. move. So Quillin entered with the size advantage, a big one, against Miguel Cotto's stand-in, because Michael Zarafa copied plenty of his tattoos, but not his hairstyle. I don't know what Quillin's doing. I wrote in my preview that I think Quillin should move to super middleweight. I think he's got a better shot over there in being in lucrative fights after he fights Jacobs. And all intention that we're seeing right now is that he's fighting Jacobs on December 5th at the Barclays Center.
Just on size alone, he should destroy Jacobs. Like, I couldn't even believe the size of Quillin. Quillin was massive. Come fight night yesterday, it was to the point where it's unbelievable how big he looked for a middleweight.
All right, not much else to say about that fight. Cornelius Bundridge versus Jermall Charlo. Now, Bundridge is supposed to challenge and test Charlo. Bundridge is tough. He knows all the old man tricks in the game. And Jermall Charlo, for all intents and purposes, is a guy who's fought his entire career trying to keep everything on the outside. He's got a for my money right now, there aren't many jabs in boxing that are better than Charlo's. And he's been rated as one of the top prospects in boxing for like 3 years. And even though he's a little more limited than his brother, who's a bit more well-rounded. And Charlo came in and destroyed Cornelius Bundridge. He dropped him like 3 or 4 times. How surprised were you by Charlo's power, his ability to land those accurate power shots? Were you surprised, Jason?
I was surprised because I actually, if you listen back, I think I expected a distance fight, and I didn't think it was out of the realm of possibility that this fight would go at least 10, all 12 rounds, just because of the things that you mentioned about Bundridge. He's a rugged, he's a tough guy. So to see him get so thoroughly dismantled was interesting, to say the least. I think you really have to take into account, and I hate to do this, but I do, I think you have to take into account Bundridge's age and relative ability to take a punch.
42 years like old.
It seemed like Bundridge had zero punch resistance. But even without that, he reverted to, like you said, the dirty tricks. When they would get in close, Bundridge would immediately started whacking him behind the head. Immediately. Like the first punch in the clinch, was behind the head. So, of course, Charlo retaliates back with one, just, you know, like, hey, you did it to me, I'm doing it right back kind of thing, you know, machismo. Bundridge throws three back behind Charlo's head, then looks to the ref and is like, hey, he hit me behind my head. he tried to pull all the veteran stuff, and that was in the second round, I think, that I recall seeing that. And it was just like, Bundridge knew really early on in this fight that things were not going well for him, and it was not going to work out. So I think, you know, and then you see him start trying to punch him behind the back of the head, and it was just like, oh, shit, you know, this fight's going to be over soon. I was definitely impressed by Charlo, because that was the question. I was certainly impressed by him, but I think we just need to tamper our response to this fight with, you know, how much punch resistance did Bundridge have at this point in his career.
Yeah, I think he still had a good amount, because I knew that Charlo had power, but he's always been so patient when he fights, and he likes to do everything perfect. You know, he doesn't throw power shots too often unless he's consistently and like jabbed effectively and really established it. And the first right hand Charlo hit him with, Bundridge was down, and it wasn't like. That wasn't a hard shot, because that was a clean, hard shot. I think you have to take into consideration, yeah, Bundridge is older and he's been down before, but at the same time, Charlo, like, he's had all the tools. He hasn't been considered one of the top prospects in the sport for as long as he has, because this wasn't the kind of performance we would expect out of him at some point in the future. That's enough about that fight. Marcus Brown also got featured on the undercard just due to the quick fight that was Bundridge and Charlo. Marcus Brown, I believe, is the guy PBC are going to set up to beat Adonis Stevenson. By the time Adonis Stevenson is ready to lose, meaning he slipped a little bit, he can be beaten, Marcus Brown will be there. And what Marcus Brown did to Gabriel Campillo, Artur Beterbiev, who destroyed Campillo, Kovalev, who destroyed Campillo, they looked at that fight and said, wow, he did that to him? I mean, Campillo got hit with a body shot, and you could have, like, you would have thought somebody was shot him with a tase gun.
The wince, the pain on his face was like when Golovkin hit Macklin. It was that same kind of just like doubled over in pain, and it's that delayed reaction to the body shot, and that's when you really know that they got hit, you know, when you don't see it right away. It takes a second, and then all of a sudden, they're winced over.
Yep. Marcus Brown, he's a good prospect, too.
That was impressive.
He was very impressive against Campillo, which was the biggest test of his career so far. And I expect they're going to move Brown really quickly.
You say prospect. He's clearly going to be in the top 20 of the sport now.
Yeah, but
so how do you manage consider him?
Spence a prospect still, too.
I guess to an extent.
Better be as a prospect.
Did you throw
too.
Him at contender? I think Spence is at contender level, yeah. Right?
I think that's more accurate.
Yeah. I think they both might be out of prospect at this point and onto contender. Yeah.
Fair enough. I'll give you guys that point.
So what do you do as you know, the managerial team of Marcus Brown? Where do you move them? Because at the minute, unknown fairly.
Completely unknown. I think I would love to see him in with Beterbiev, and I know that, you know, Angelo, we talked about this a little bit, and how, you know, from a promotional standpoint, and Al Heyman and PBC and all that, it's not maybe the best move, but I would love that fight.
I think I would rather put Brown in with Bute and have Beterbiev fight somebody like Alvarez. Beterbiev has the amateur background to back up a 12-round fight against a top 5 to 10 opponent. Marcus Brown doesn't have that. And that's why he's got to get a fight where you're not going to get him outclassed and ruin him forever. And Beterbiev has the kind of power where a guy like say he fought Tommy Karpinski or something, you know, he can bail himself out at any moment. I don't know that Brown is that strong, not like Beterbiev.
Oh, I don't know. I saw so many flaws in Beterbiev recently that I think my stock just plummeted with him so far.
I agree. I I think it was his, what outing was it? When he was fighting Johnson, he was hittable. I don't know.
So hittable. Like
There were issues I saw, but it's not a fight that you'd feel 100% good about putting him into. You would suspect that he might be able to pull it off, but you wouldn't feel... I think if it was me, I'd be targeting someone like Aleida Alvarez.
I think that's a good fight, but one that Brown can lose. I think they have something on their hands with Brown. Alvarez is, at the very... He's one of those guys that he'll make a fight boring if he has to, and then outpoint you. He's very good at that. So... And he, on his own, should be getting a title shot soon. He is good enough for that. If
so,
at the very
what do
least,
you send him to the UK to bag on Cleverly and Macarinelli and people like that?
No, come on. Leave Cleverly alone. I want him to fight Kovalev again.
So it's just a difficult career to manage. He's in a tough spot.
So let's keep this in PBC, okay? And I was just looking at this right now. Light heavyweight is... This is now going to be the new welterweight. If you look at what they've got Kovalev and Stevenson, and Fanfara's there. So those are the top three, and we could throw Hopkins in there. But some of the guys who are undefeated right now, Alvarez, Beterbiev, I guess we should mention Woosteisen, Marcus Brown, and then let's throw Edwin Rodriguez in there as well, because he's also signed with PBC, and Rodriguez is way better than advertised. He's only ever lost to Andre Ward. And then there's guys like Bika who are still there, and Carpensi, and so there's a lot of good fights for them to make at light heavyweight.
Mm.
Should we talk about Mohamedi? Does he belong in this conversation? We should throw Chavez Jr. in this conversation, actually, because whoever beats him next, and I highly doubt they give him a fight that he can lose next, but whoever beats him next is going to get some of that rub for retiring him. Yeah. I think Brown should fight a guy like Bute. I think that's the best kind of fight for him. Somebody with the name, but and has looked okay recently, but can't upset him.
Mm.
I think he still needs to develop a little bit. We need to see him go 12 rounds. Beterbiev, on the other hand, I think a guy like Woosteisen is a good fight for him, because Beterbiev will probably knock him out, but Beterbiev needs to learn the hard way that he can't just... look for a knockout on everybody.
Mm. I think that matchup works as well, because Beterbiev, or however it is we're saying it this week, is getting the name recognition he needs. Like, his branding isn't a problem. It's his actual boxing development. It's the complete opposite of Brown, who just needs advertism.
That's well said, Simon. Whereas you look at Brown and you see a complete fighter without the backing. You look at Beterbiev, you got all the backing in the world, but hey, maybe not we're not necessarily being sold a bill of goods with him, I think.
And yeah, Beterbiev has a better knockout highlight reel.
He's like a Donaire, though, in the sense that he's kind of in the slipstream of Kovalev. Everyone's looking for the next, and he's the next Kovalev, so he gets gifted with all of the traits and talents that we associate with Kovalev.
I wouldn't
in the
put
way
it past
that we did
him
with
to
Donaire.
Do that. Yeah, ooh, I wouldn't
put
it
past
him
that
to put Stevenson versus Beterbiev, but actually market it with like Kovalev highlights and stuff and see if they can fool everybody. And they'll have to cut Beterbiev's hair, because he got thicker hair than Kovalev, but I think they can do it.
Mm.
Last but not... Oh, actually, we talked a little bit about Oscar Valdez, but Valdez looked really good against Avalos. Knocked Avalos, or we stopped Avalos. He just brutalized Avalos. Not looking so good these days. And then last but not least, our boy, Anthony Joshua, as I predicted, as I told you guys, and as you guys didn't bet, Simon, stopped Gary Cornish in one round in Ronda Rousey-like fashion.
How fast was it? I haven't seen that. I haven't been able to...
It's like 90 seconds into round one.
Wow.
It's like the first right hand Joshua landed, Cornish was like, oh, wow. Okay.
Man, I gotta start getting worried about his development at this point. You know, the kid needs to get taken.
He's
some
worried
rounds.
Too. He's worried too. He's like, guys, can you get up?
He needs to get taken some rounds. You know, he needs to feel a little bit of adversity.
It looked like it was going to be some adversity at the start because Cornish actually came out very confident, and I think this was what screwed him up, but he came out confident and was jabbing with Joshua, and it looked like, okay, Cornish might be live here, and then Joshua hit him, and down goes Cornish. But and that was Cornish's fault, I think, because he's a little reckless with not respecting Joshua's power. He thought he was just fighting any other heavyweight.
It was so annoying. I had money on round two because I thought, you know what's going to happen here? Round one, AJ's going to give him respect. Cornish is going to respect AJ, and they're going to be feeling each other out and a bit cagey. And the complete opposite happened, and he listened to the Braveheart theme on the way in and got full of ideas above his station, and it just went terribly.
Well, Joshua probably learned from the Johnson fight that I don't need to respect anybody. They need to earn my respect. Because he respected Johnson, and Johnson lasted, what, two rounds?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I knew Joshua would stop Cornish in one round. I just looked at Cornish.
You told me too. I told you I'm betting on two, and you said, yeah, that makes sense.
Well, it does make sense, but I told you guys before the fight, one round. Cornish ain't going to last that long.
I had it middle of the second round was what I expected.
Yeah, I know. I think we put it last week. We put 4.5 minutes as the over under on how long this fight would go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Let's talk about. You guys want to talk about the news or the previews? I think we should talk about the previews first because the news is juicy this week. So this week we're not going to spend too much time on previews, but we've got Sammy Vasquez Jr. versus Jose Lopez, and this is on Tuesday on Fox Sports 1. And this is just a great PBC series. The Austin Trout card that they debuted, really good card. This was another one with Sammy Vasquez, and Vasquez is one of the welterweight prospects that's coming up. I like Vasquez a lot. He does have development to do, and he's one of those fighters that if you listen to him in interviews, he knows that he's a flawed guy. And not like that's a bad thing, but you know, he knows he's not perfect and that he's got things to work on. And he did an AMA on the Reddit Boxing this week, so check that out. Then we have Caleb Truax versus Fernando Guerrero on Friday, Bounce TV. Another terrific PBC card because this is the birth, really, of like the American domestic scene. And I think Bounce TV is specifically going to, and the Fox Sports 1 are specifically going to be cards to develop our domestic level of boxing here. This is a great fight between two former world title contenders, which is also what George Groves is. And it also has Erickson Lubin on the undercard. And Lubin's one of the best welterweight prospects that we've got. And I mean like real prospect. He's got like 8 fights. And then on Saturday, Hecky Butler's going to defend his WBA minimum weight title against Simpiwi Konko. So expect Butler to win this by a knockout. 8 rounds maybe. All right, so the news. Or anything you guys want to say about these previews?
Hecky Butler, in terms of viewing, how easy is that to watch?
It's probably about as easy as looking for Bounce TV on your TV.
Mm.
Yeah, which is to say, it is very difficult.
Does that require a trampoline?
It requires, I don't know. I don't even know how I'm going to watch this one. I'm going to have to download it on Sunday morning when hopefully somebody uploads it. One.
It's a shame because I bet I'll easily be able to watch the Steve Smith fight, and I'll struggle to watch, you know.
Yeah, I didn't even put that on the preview list.
Exactly, and it's going to be a walk in the park to find and watch that fight. Whereas champion of his division, Hecky Butler, world title fight is going to be a nightmare to find.
Maybe Box Nation takes some pity and they pick it up. Mm. I mean, it should be easy. I mean, you could probably stream this fight here for like I think if we put in a bid to get the rights to broadcast it here, I think we could probably pay $300 and they'll let us stream it here.
I'll have to look into this. Yeah.
check my site, sundaypuncher.com. We might stream the fight. Bob Arum and Amir Khan, they are in talks to make a Pacquiao fight for Amir Khan, who lost out on the Mayweather fight. But at the same time, Shane Mosley is also saying that he's negotiating with Khan's people to fight him in December. Now, first of all, let's not even address the Shane Mosley part of this because who knows if that's true. If it is, that's embarrassing for Amir Khan. But what are the barriers that you guys see to a Pacquiao versus Khan fight happening? Let's just rattle them all off. Why don't you guys take turns?
I mean, so can we just talk about Al Haymon versus
Haymon Arum?
Yeah, so yeah. One, Haymon and Arum. Oh, wait, that's where we stop, right? Because I
think that goes about far enough.
Injuries, locations.
They made one lucrative fight together, you know, but Khan Pacquiao isn't Pacquiao Mayweather by any stretch, no matter, you know, whose fans you talk to.
Pacquiao feels he's the A-side in this and wants it to be in China with various stipulations. Khan's also got diva tendencies and would likely reject some of the more demanding requests about the fight's details and the sort of minutiae that surrounds it.
I just go back to, does Amir Khan really think that he's going to go off and negotiate a fight by himself without Al Haymon having any say in the matter?
Well, that's what makes no sense, is Amir Khan is constantly out there on social media and in, you know, the regular media and the public's eye making all of these claims. And it's like, he's the one fighter who doesn't actually understand how to be managed by Al Haymon. And it's say thank you and shut the fuck up. Al Haymon does the rest.
Right. And at this point, like, if you're Khan, just look at what Haymon does for all the other fighters who are loyal. They stay quiet. They say, thank you, Al. Thank you, my team. And they move on to talking about what they did in the fight. They keep it strictly business in every interview. And Haymon
rewards
them.
Why did Haymon sign Khan? He seems to hate him.
I think he hates what Khan does. I mean, just think about it. Haymon's character is that he doesn't speak unless... I mean, he just doesn't speak. He stays quiet and takes care of business. And what does Khan do? He doesn't take care of business and talks a lot.
So my question wasn't, why are they incompatible now? It's, why did they ever sign him in the first place?
Well, because I think Haymon, like Virgil Hunter, saw potential in maybe rehabilitating Khan.
I think more they were probably sold on this idea of Khan having a very big fan base and being able to make money off of him. I think, you know, Al Haymon's about money, you know.
And it's true, he does. There's people I know that don't like boxing that ask me when Amir Khan's fighting next or who he's
fighting.
That's
what I'm saying. So that's why Al Haymon wanted anything to do with him, is because, you know, he has a level of popularity in the UK, and Al Haymon is obviously making moves with a lot of UK boxers. Khan's at the top of the list. It says... Hey, you know, it kind of says to other UK boxers, oh, yeah, I also manage Amir Khan, too. You've heard of him, right? You know what I mean? It's like a status symbol for Al Haymon to have him. But they do seem incompatible for each other.
I think it's a lot of Amir Khan's doing. I don't think that Haymon just has taken a disliking to him because, you know, he likes Sean Porter better or something. I think there's a lot of this that is Khan's fault. And I think a lot of it has to do with Khan just trying to do Haymon's job for him, trying to make fights that Haymon might already have other plans, you know. And the other thing is, Khan didn't perform well against Chris Algieri. He won the fight, but he should have blown Algieri out. And Algieri ended up hurting him and making every round tough. And the other barrier I see is that if Khan's going to wait for Pacquiao, and then also somehow get this done with Al Haymon in the picture, what is he going to be out of the ring for over a year? Pacquiao's not coming back till April, they say, at the earliest, because of his shoulder injury. That doesn't seem wise for sales. Doesn't seem wise for anything. Khan should leave the negotiating and the business to Al Haymon. Just focus on training. Because Virgil Hunter was in the news this week talking about, amongst other things, Amir Khan. And he had some comments about Khan, that Khan has a lot of things going on outside of the ring, that he's not fully focusing on boxing like he should, and that's why he's performing below where he's capable of. He said that Khan might have some ADD or some issue. He mentioned something about his eyes and Khan always, you know, not keeping eye focus, or just, in general, a lack of focus on Khan's part. What did you guys think about those comments Virgil Hunter made?
Sorry, I wasn't listening. What?
What did you guys think about those comments Virgil Hunter made? Well, way to tune out, Simon.
Yeah, no, you,
it was a joke about Amir Khan not paying attention.
Yeah.
Was that what it was?
Yeah, I think it's.
That one went over my head. You jerk.
No, you can see the merit in it, and we spoke earlier about how he seems, I don't know, averse to taking direction. you got people yelling at him to do X, Y, and Z, and it feels like he, I don't know, he's a sucker for the red mist, isn't he, to, you know, go in and want to brawl, and he's one of those fighters that wants to give a certain account of themselves, and it just doesn't line up with their talents and abilities, and if they'd only listen, there's a lot more that they could be doing. So I think it's probably on the money. I mean, that being said, it's kind of a criticism of yourself, isn't it? Like, I feel like what we've heard is basically the teacher saying that my students are failing their tests because they're all idiots and don't pay attention. It's like, well, maybe, but that's kind of your job to an extent, to get them to understand and follow the instruction.
Yeah, that's a good point there. Maybe failure to reach them and to effectively, you know, make a difference.
Maybe Andre Ward is just an exceptional talent.
And maybe he is, and Virgil Hunter, a lot of his success has been because Ward is so good, and he hasn't been able to duplicate that anywhere.
One thing that he has been able to duplicate, though, which was striking, is when Andre Berto was giving his quick little pre-fight interview with Jim Gray. He managed to sound exactly like Virgil Hunter.
He did.
He slowed his voice down, and he started whispering his answers and started pausing between words like he was being deep in thought. And he did this amazing Virgil Hunter impression. So, you know, Virgil Hunter imparted something onto Andre Berto. It happened to be the way he speaks, but...
That's absolutely true. I have a quick question for you guys. In the 10th, going into the 11th round, I think it was, Virgil Hunter was talking about putting down a dog in the corner to Andre Berto. Do you remember what was going on? Like, why did he say that? Did that have anything to do with the fight? Do you guys remember this? No?
Yeah, I think the vet had called, basically, mid-fight with some upsetting news. He shared that news in the hopes that it might spur a better performance.
That was the best performance we were going to get out of Berto, probably. I actually thought Berto did a good job with what physical and mental capabilities that he has.
Yeah, with who Berto is, he didn't give up like so many other fighters either. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So kudos, I mean,
Canelo gave up.
Yeah,
I think at Canelo one point he was just frustrated. He was like, I can't do this.
A lot of fighters give up.
Canelo was the kid with the unicycle who just got sick of falling off and was like, I had enough of this.
Right. You know, so, yeah, the one thing you could say for Berto is he didn't give up. So what do we got for titillating news stories?
Well, Jameis Winston just threw an interception. Takashi Miura, we were talking about the super featherweight division earlier. Takashi Miura signed a fight with Francisco Vargas, who's a title holder here in America. Tall, lanky guy with power. This is a fantastic fight. Maybe a fight of the year between two guys who can punch. It's November 21st. And if you haven't seen Takashi Miura, look up his fight with Uchiyama. It's an absolute war. Both guys land huge shots. Miura's just... If you could imagine if Provodnikov could match his aggression with actual, I hesitate to make this comparison, but Marquez is a really good boxer despite getting himself into wars. Take away the counterpunching though, and that's kind of like what Miura is. He's a really good boxer, but he does well in like wars. How excited are you guys about this fight?
Yeah, it'd be an absolutely dynamite fight, but is it on a card that's built?
I think this is the card. This is the card itself.
So, but there's no other news about what will be on that fight.
Let me just.
It's happening the same night as like Cotto Canelo, isn't it? So is it going to be competing with that?
Actually, I didn't realize this. They put it on the undercard, which makes this pay per view. It's now in the running to compete with the Mayweather Berto undercard. And that pay-per-view in general, because the whole pay-per-view was a good pay-per-view. I think it was the best one this year. I mean, it's definitely better than Mayweather-Pacquiao. That undercard was atrocious. But this one might compete. This might be a fight of the year candidate right here.
No, it should be a good scrap.
All right. So I talked about Marquez right now. Marquez himself, the Juan Manuel, is looking to drink urine in December. I mean, return in December. They are, his camp are targeting a title fight, which might likely means, first of all, that means it's not Cal Brook. Because if you haven't done the logistics in your head, Cal Brook fights in late October. He's going to get ready by December for Marquez. Cal Brook's known for taking very long breaks between his fights. So it's not going to be Cal Brook. But Marquez wants a title fight and he wants to return in December. And there's a possibility that maybe he wants a fifth Pacquiao fight. So where do you guys stand on a fifth Pacquiao fight? Yes or no?
I say yes. I'm okay with it.
It was fun enough.
Yep. So I'm completely fine with it.
We're all in agreement.
Pacquiao's got obviously something to prove. Marquez is in a position where he has, will have an extreme desire to prove to all Pacquiao's fans that it wasn't a lucky punch, right? So I think both fighters could come into that fight with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, and I think it would make for a really great fight.
But do you think that Marquez can still compete at a title level at the welterweight division?
It depends on whose title we're talking about. First off, I don't think Pacquiao has any titles.
No, the title holders at welterweight are Thurman, Mayweather, Brooke.
Yeah, he could compete with Thurman. Yeah, I think he could compete with all of those folks outside of Mayweather.
Bradley needs to look appetizing as of late.
I think he could definitely compete with all of them. I don't know that I'm not going to pick him in all of them, but I don't think Marquez is a shot fighter. He made a kind of like a rash decision to go out after that Bradley fight, because I do think he has enough left in the tank to definitely compete at the highest level.
Would you rather have Thurman fight Porter, which looks likely, or Thurman fight Marquez?
Marquez.
Simon? No, I think Porter.
I thought Simon was going to say Sam Eggington. Go on.
No, I think that with someone like Thurman and Porter are both contemporarily relevant, and so it's kind of like a modern matchup between them that does well for both of them. Marquez is someone you need to put against either somebody whose brand you're trying to build, or I see it's a difficult one because Marquez.
Well, that's the thing. You would be building the brand of Thurman if he has it in him to be Marquez. It would be a big name recognition fight for him.
I think he's past the point that Marquez as a scalp on his wall would add terribly much. I think people are already sold on him as a top contender at welterweight.
That's the point.
Is someone like Sanam Ali, Errol Spence, Sam Eggington, you know, they're the people that would benefit from a Marquez victory.
Oh, Eggington would, you know, Eggington would probably be a style matchup that would not be too good for Marquez. That would actually be an interesting fight. Last but not least, as Marcus Mariota is destroying the Bucks right now, Zhu Xueming is looking to come back. He's finished filming his reality show, and he had an injury of some sort that is now healed up. He's looking to return. Does Zhu Xueming have a future at flyweight? He might have a future at welterweight, but he wants to stay at flyweight. Oh, well, this is how we're going to end the podcast, huh? You guys have nothing to say.
Well, what do you want him to do? Because I think that if you are shut out by Roeng, you probably aren't going to kill it. You aren't going to kill it at the division, not with that performance.
You don't think he should just just go an all or nothing and fight Roman Gonzalez?
Well, I don't know. It'd be lucrative because he's really popular. So, you know, people would watch it, but he'd just get murdered. You know, it'd be silly. It'd be irresponsible.
Would you pay for Xueming Gonzalez on pay-per-view? Like 10 bucks?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, definitely.
I would,
because it'd be hilarious, but it would also be reckless and irresponsible.
Yeah, you guys are horrible.
Okay, does Xueming beat anybody in the top 10 at flyweight? Actually, no. You know what? I'll give you $1 if you guys can name the top 10 at flyweight without looking it up. right now. You guys can both do it together.
Ruem Roeng, Gonzalez, Estrada, Ioka, and then it gets difficult. Ryan Valoria.
Okay, Mithelini. Arroyo. Is Arroyo fighting a flyweight still?
I don't know. I don't think so. It's the Japanese that you struggle with.
There's no more Kagawa? Japanese in the top 10 at flyweight, as far as I know.
Kagawa, I would say.
Arroyo's the other one. So the other ones that we missed are Revico. Sosa. Casemiro, who... poor guy. And then Yadmonkal Vor Sangthap. We could have gotten all the other ones, but we were not going to get that one. There was no hope for us. None at all. We could have gotten the next 10, but probably not gotten that guy. All right, so that's it for this episode. We hope you enjoy it. Now, subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us ratings. Or do they have star ratings on iTunes? Just lots of 5 stars.
Lots of 5 stars.
Lots of 5 stars.
I have no idea what this rating system looks like, but do it good.
I mean,
it is 5 stars. Yeah,
I would pay you guys like other promotions pay me to give their stars 5-star ratings when I write the previews, but I can't do that because I don't make any money. But also, you can send us emails and stuff. Thanks for the emails we got last week, because I totally messed up the podcast last week. I'll tell you what I did. I edited the podcast. It was really nice, and then I added music on. And while I was adding the music, I muted our track with our audio, and then I exported it. And so it exported with music and no audio. And then I didn't bother to listen back because I was
Which
in such a rush.
Which is basically illegal because we're just exporting full music files.
Yeah, exactly. But at least I didn't charge for it. So then I upload it. And then I even saw on the SoundCloud thing, the wave thing looked really weird. But I was like, whatever. Maybe we just spoke quietly this episode. And then I started getting emails, and Dean's messaging me on Skype in the morning at like 5 a.m. Hey, there's no sound. Let me listen again. Nope, there's no sound. I was like, oh god.
Well, at least we know we have listeners.
Yeah, so all 2 of you that it was actually like 4 people that sent emails and Twitter, so you can reach us on Twitter too. I like to get the Twitter stuff because the emails are longer. So we'll be back next week. We might bring back the game show next week. Thanks for listening. And also, we have a calendar that I just updated today that if you put it on your phone, you can find it on the website. Just click calendar. It'll keep you updated and alerted with all upcoming fights and where you can watch them on TV. Thank God football's back.
Except those that are at
minimum weight. Oh, did you say except the ones that are at minimum weight?
Yeah.
Hey, when you find a way to watch that fight, I'll put it on the calendar.
Deal.
When you find what time that fight's going to start, I'll put it on the calendar. Ken just put an all-day event that says
he's fighting
event.
Today. That's what I was going to say, because that's what it's going to take you to find it. So
Just keep it on your mind all day long.
It's going to be an all-day event to try to locate it.
Because the moment this podcast is over, you're forgetting about that fight.